And this is KROV Oroville 91.1 FM Community Radio. And we're also heard on the internet at KROV.FM. And it is time for an Our Town program. My name is Lee Edwards, and my guest today from the Lake Oroville Garden Club is Galen Trum. And welcome to you. And, well, hello.
Hello. Glad to be here.
And let's see where we can start. I suppose we could start formally, somewhat formal, as if the club, how it's organized, what it does, what its goals are.
Sure.
Do you have regular meetings, who belongs, things like that?
Yes, we have a very active club. We have approximately 74 members right now. And we call ourselves the Lake Oroville Area Garden Club because some of our friends are from the outlying areas of Oroville. And it started in about 1976 as a coffee klatch, sort of, with a bunch of ladies from Kelly Ridge who were interested in plants. And so they got together once a week and shared things that they had learned and things that were working in their garden. And it sort of grew, and they felt like, oh, we have to find a place to meet. So in about 1982, I would say it grew. I am new to the club, only 3 years since I retired from teaching. So I didn't realize really the scope of the club when I first joined because I thought it was just local. But it's actually California Garden Club Incorporated, which is district, state, and national.
Oh, my goodness.
So there's a lot of gardeners out there, men and women, who are very dedicated to it. And we have a president, and this year and next year, I will be the president. And we have a regular vice president, second vice president, secretary, treasurer, just like a lot of groups.
Well, being a part of a network like that, I wonder what it might bring you in terms of any help or advantage or whatever. In other words, is there some kind of communication and all? And maybe there's areas where you can learn. Maybe some garden club has something to suggest to others or so on. Is there any kind of communication, or is it just in name only that you're part of?
No, we actually, we have a monthly meeting, the second Thursday of the month, and we have speakers who come and give their expertise to us, whatever it is. Like, I can give you some examples. Like, we've had talks on herbs and salvias, how to plant and trim fruit trees, hybridizing plants, seed saving, you name it. We try to cover all the areas that people are interested in. Soil, bees, of course.
Of course, we must mention bees here.
Yes, of course. Well, and floral design, that's another thing. Some ladies are really into the floral design side of gardening, not just in their yards or in containers.
Yeah, I have, of course, you drive around, and you're supposed to watch where you're driving and be careful, but, but there's still room, as you know, for your eyes to drift, and some places you drive by, you know that somebody's really taking a lot of care because you just see what's in the yard or what faces the street, and you know that they've really, really done a lot of planning. What about things like the world around us now? We have such a tremendous problem with
yes.
water in this
yes.
state, and I assume that there are a lot of plants that take more water and some that take less, et cetera.
Definitely. We actually have been trying to teach this, and we've had speakers on drought-tolerant plants and how to reduce water use. And a lot of people don't realize that using just drip irrigation, smaller amounts of water, and shutting off their sprinklers, reducing lawns, not always taking them out. Some people are replacing them with hardscapes, but like I have a beautiful lawn I really don't want to get rid of. But I may have to reduce it at some point. And there's a lot of native plants. That's what we're kind of looking at right now in our club, is how to use our California native plants who really survived during these times. And I have changed my yard into a lot of native plantings because I haven't had to water them at all. And it's been wonderful. So they still attract your pollinators, and you can put timers on your watering systems to be shorter bursts of time. You know, I talked to a man who had had his yard replaced, and he had a huge yard, and he said they dug up over 100 sprinkler heads.
Oh my God.
Well, you can imagine how much water was going, and some of it was going into the street, he admitted. You know,
sure.
He didn't check them often. So some of the suggestions have been made is in these areas, like along streets, to do what they're calling nature strips, either wild plants, wild flowers, or natives, or vegetables, instead of things that require this constant watering. Herbs are good, you know. Herbs can be beautiful, and they don't have to have a lot of water, certain ones. And I, you know, I was looking through some of my books to look and see the things that I have in my yard that don't take a lot of water. But, you know, there's a nice book out there about native plants. And there's a nursery in Chico that's excellent. They are just a native plant nursery. They're very learned on these subjects. And we've gone on tour there.
Which one would that be?
It's called the California Native Plant Nursery.
Okay.
And it's in Chico. And they are really knowledgeable. They have a nice website. You can go on there.
Are natives at all hard to establish? Because I can give you one experience. I had, and my experience was with California, I guess it's called California buckwheat or something. And I got a couple of plants. I put one in one place and one in another.
Oh.
The one place, it just it's still there, but it's barely. I give it water now and then, and it's supposed to not need much water. The other one, which is on the lower part of the hill, I got to prune it back now.
Okay.
So that made me think, and I tried a couple other natives, and they didn't make it.
Oh.
I got them with the idea I wasn't going to have to water them. Well, I understand you have to water them to get them established.
You do.
But they seem to have their own personalities or plantalities or whatever you want to call them. They all kind of have their own mind as to where they want to be.
That's true. And we do, if we're uprooting them from their natural spot.
Sure.
It's a good idea to, when you get them at a nursery, to really study which ones are great. Because some need shade. Some can't take sun. And they do have to be divided sometimes after a certain time.
Uh-huh.
Because nature kind of takes care of that. It kills off certain ones.
Gotcha.
And so, you know, salvias are really big right now because a lot of people think they were just blue salvias. And now there's like four different colors of salvias. And they're like a sage.
Yeah.
That's their name, sage. But there's a really good thing that... There's a man named John Winnesley. He'd be a good speaker, by the way.
I've had him on once, but I want to get him back. It's been two or three years.
He does a natural design, and he does a lot of... That's his specialty, of course. He loves salvias. And he was saying that he plants them mainly for pollinators and hummingbirds because he calls it their slow food. He said when we feed them at a bird feeder... It's fast food.
Gotcha.
So
yeah.
That's when they can, different things are blooming at different time. That's their slow food place.
That's cute.
So, yeah, I thought that was good. And he said, we are a society that has done mow and blow. We've mowed our lawns and blown all the good things away. And he's trying to talk us into taking our cuttings.
Just occurred to me just at that instant, and I guess they're probably, I'm not that aware of the what would you call it, the city or the build-up scene because I'm out in the boondocks, but even if everybody's lawn clippings were raked and left curbside or something, what a What a great resource that would be for somebody. Somebody could have an entire company doing nothing but taking those and doing whatever you do to make them reusable in some way.
That's
true. What a shame, because I'm sure they just get sort of, I don't know what people do with them. I guess you throw them in the backyard or
green
something.
Green waste. You know, if you put them around your plants or around edges of plants, and if you don't like that look, I've been told, you know, just put a little bark on top of it.
There you go.
You can continue to make it look clean if you like. Some of us like neat and tidy gardens.
Sure, I can understand.
But, you know, my son, of course, Matthew's into the permaculture look, and he said, you have to chop and drop. You know, don't waste that good mulch, that natural mulch. So I'm trying that this year, and if it looks untidy to me, then I just sprinkle a little bit of soil or other chips on top of it. So does the work. So.
Yeah.
But mulch is big this year with the drought. It's something we really need to do. And if we have to get rid of our lawns, which is kind of sad, but I've seen some on Montgomery Street who have killed off their lawns and now they're planting other things, which is good as long as it looks nice. You know, I think it's difficult to give up our green.
Oh, sure.
But there's a lot of green plants that don't need, and beautiful flowers, and they can be perennials.
So. Yeah, that's something you should say. I mean, I understand it, but just for people listening, somebody doesn't know the difference between a perennial and another plant. What does that mean?
Right. Well, a perennial is one that will come back each year or reseed itself, whereas an annual, which are good for color spot, but they're only a 1 year. Unless you save your seeds. Some people are really good at seed saving, drying them and keeping them for the next year.
I assume then by that every flowering plant at some place in its anatomy has a seed. Would they be hard for the average person to find, or is it very obvious?
Usually it's pretty obvious. It's on the head of the flower. Like I have a picture here of an echinacea, and the center of it is filled with seeds. And these are beneficial because if you let them dry naturally, because in California we usually don't have summer rain, unfortunately, but you can then pick the seed heads, and also it's good for the birds. They'll come and sit right on the seed head and eat them. So if you want some, you have to kind of leave a few for them.
Yeah.
And some are pods. Sometimes you see them on trees and on large flowers. But then some plants, of course, that are bulbs and rhizomes have to be divided and planted. But at our club, we usually have a place outside where we share seeds and bulbs and rhizomes other plants that we have too much. We just trade with each other. What a deal. Yeah, it's
really like good. That's community in action.
It is. And we have a newsletter every month. It goes, and we have an online. You can like us on Facebook.
What's the web address so we get information about you guys? What would if I just were going to put us into search, what would I search for to find?
www.loagardenclub.com.
Okay, and on this you will find information and references to what plants and to
activities
and so on.
Yeah. And our newsletter can be, we can send you a newsletter if you email me. My email is Mrs. Trumm, T-R-U-M-M, at yahoo.com. And I can send you our newsletter, which gives all of our activities. It gives tips on gardening, when our tours will be. And we have a policy. If you visit us, you can come 2 times without becoming a member. Just visit us. And then if you like us, you can join. And it's only $20 a year. I mean, you can't go wrong
with that. I don't think so.
And we have lots of activities going on right now. I wanted to tell you, Lee, we just got a very exciting thing happen. Some people probably know about the county atrium out at the county building.
Yeah.
And there was a man there who was taking care of it for years. They called him Blackie. And he cared for those tropical plants at Indoor Atrium for many, many years. And when he passed away, it started having lots of problems because he wasn't there to give it the TLC. So one day I was visiting there, and a lady came out and said, "Oh, are you interested in the atrium?" So I introduced myself, and after a relationship with them, we have put in a request to take over the care of that, and they have accepted that. So starting this month, we will be working with the atrium committee and the groundspeople, and we're going to go twice a month. And our ladies, with their expertise, are going to help bring it back to life.
Okay, I'm sure you'll have no problem with doing that.
So I'm glad that we can do this because it's looking really sad right now. There's a lot of things happening, and it needs the tropical plants are really dying, and some of the big trees are all the way to the skylight now, and they have to be removed.
Yeah. Yeah,
they're going to have to, unfortunately.
You're going to have too much success, I guess, if you aren't careful.
Well, and they planted it on the rock.
Yeah.
And so now it doesn't have any place to go, unfortunately. So anyway, that was one of our big ones. And then the other thing we're trying to do is we're trying to get in touch with all the business owners downtown on the Montgomery Street and Myers, and they would like us to help them plant planters. With beautiful flowers.
Sure, sure.
So we're looking into that and working with the city.
Oh, that's special.
To have that.
Oh,
happen.
By the way, we're talking with Galen Trum, Lake Orville Area Garden Club, current president. Where are your meetings held?
We meet at the Presbyterian Church on Foothill Boulevard. It's Trinity Presbyterian at 2350. Foothill Boulevard, and it's the second Thursday of each month, and we meet at 9:30 for cake and coffee and conversation, and then at 10 o'clock our meeting begins, usually with a speaker. Sometimes it's our own garden club ladies giving a horticulture moment.
Sure.
Where they share something that's been successful in their garden. And we're going to be having our big sale this Saturday in the gazebo at the Lot House. 9 to 4, we'll be at the gazebo selling one-of-a-kind, really reasonable plants for Mother's Day, and it's during Fiesta Days. So come on down to the gazebo, and we actually set up something that's very good for people who want to continue to look around. We have what we call our plant hotel, and when you buy something, we keep it and give you a number, and you can go shopping and eat and have fun and then come back and get it on your way out.
All right. Yeah, that makes sense. You don't have the inconvenience of trying to take it with you or leaving it in a hot car for several hours and then getting home with something that's not too happy.
That's
anyway.
Correct.
What a deal.
So
it's so interesting to me. I can't say I experienced it directly, but as a kid, we family I was with always had a garden. It wasn't for fun. Oh. They canned things, put them up in these glass jars. That wasn't for fun either. It was it was to survive and to feed yourself and be able to live.
Right.
And things have changed so much since then. And in a way, I see it as a privilege that people can choose to grow things or not instead of maybe a necessity. But maybe it's not so much of a little frivolous hobby. It's a connection with the earth, with life, with things growing. And there's a lot of practicalities, too, as you mentioned, herbs and things that people grow.
Well,
and things for their table.
We're working in two schools, one here in Oroville, the Hearthstone Charter School, and we've started gardens there. We're sponsoring a junior garden club. It'll
All
be
right.
this afternoon at 1:30. And today we're making seed balls, and that's an interesting clay thing that you put seeds in, and they toss them out, and they naturally dissolve and go into the ground. And we have taught the children all year. We've had class every year. I mean, this is our second year, and we've taught them all about the earth and gardening and vegetables especially. They've grown their own vegetables there, and we've harvested them. and we've grown seedlings and actually had a chance to sell them at the farmer's market here on Wednesday nights in downtown Oroville. So there's a big project in California called Food to Fork for children to teach them. You just don't go to the grocery store.
Right. Food isn't something you buy off a shelf.
Right.
It doesn't start that way.
And you can grow it yourself. And these children have actually seen this, and also at the Berry Creek School, and my son was involved in that also, where they learn to start from scratch, making their own soil, their own compost, and then planting. And they're doing very well, too. They've harvested and used them actually at the school for their lunch.
Oh, what a deal.
So, two school gardens now.
That's the place to begin. That really is. Maybe
really?
Maybe here where it's so rural, it's maybe not so rare as it would be like in a center city, but just the same, even rural, kids have got so many things distracting them and interesting them that they'll pass right by. It'll never occur to them.
Well, I think, you know, like Matthew's always said that it's a food desert up in Berry Creek because they only have fast little quick markets and they don't have any real grocery store. It's 22 miles down here.
Sure.
And so a community garden will be good. I'm sure they'll continue that. And they'd like to have a farmer's market up there if they could get enough produce.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that goes. We like to sponsor a lot of civic deals. That's our thing. Civic beautification. We take part in Arbor Day. And we have something we call Penny Pines, where we raise money and we buy reforestation, you know, so we can give it to someone who's alive or we can memory of someone. And so we do that a lot. We get one together almost every other month.
And what will you plant these or what? What
are these trees that will be planted in different forests that have burned.
Yeah.
So Smokey's happy.
Yeah, all right. We don't want to keep Smokey happy.
And he is happy too because we also do a Smokey Bear contest every year. And the children win prizes for making a poster. And it can be local. And it can go all the way up to the state. And so we have about 20 entries every year from Berry Creek School.
Wow.
And we just had our, Smokey came and we had our prizes given. And the children are getting better every year. And soon in the June meeting, we'll be giving away our scholarship fund for a horticulture student from Butte College. We give them a $500 scholarship to continue their education in horticulture. So they have to fill out a form and write us an essay telling us why and how long they've been in the program. So we're just out there doing a lot of stuff for the community, and I'd like to invite men and women to come if you're not working during that time of the morning. It's awesome.
Yeah, you said the meetings.
Second Thursday, starting at 9:30, goes till 12. And then we have, we go on tours to different places to see plants and horticulture and Patrick Ranch and Noble Orchards and the Rose Garden in Sacramento. And soon we're going to be going to Paradise to the Sawmill Creek Farm. And we see firsthand how things are done, the mandarins, and we have a lot of good things going on here in Oroville that I didn't know about. I was from the Bay Area. And since I've joined the club, I found out all kinds of things about Oroville.
Yeah, that's sort of the purpose of this little radio station.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's really, it's an unbelievable privilege to have you here and to, boy...
Mm-hmm.
Learn what you've said so far, because
well, there's classes that can be taken even on a different level. They have design classes for landscaping that are given by our state, and there'll be a state convention coming up in Reno in June, which I'll attend, and you find out all these wonderful things. All these clubs come together from all over California. And we get great ideas, and we meet children who have been involved in school gardens. And just there's just so many wonderful things going on with California Garden Clubs, and I'm just scratched the surface. I'm just beginning to learn it all. So,
well, you sure have a powerful message, in my opinion, if I might editorialize, and I'm allowed to do that. It's a parable. I don't know what you would call it. There's a proper term for it, but with life in general, so many things, unless you stop and check them out, right, you have no idea what you're missing.
And a lot of our people are seniors, like myself, because they've retired.
Sure.
And they don't want to do big gardens anymore, but we do a lot of container gardening. Even if someone just wants to do culinary herbs right in front of their windowsill,
we
encourage that. And if you just want to have a few roses in pots so that it's at the level that a person can tend them and doesn't, you don't have to get down
exactly
on your knees anymore.
Exactly.
So one of the things that we like to encourage this coming year is journaling of your garden, whether you do container or big gardens, because when I started here in Oroville to prepare the land, we live on the river and there was nothing but rocks and hill. And I learned a lot about how to terrace, and I had to take pictures from the beginning of all this rock and stuff we had to move. And so now I have that journal to go back and see the pictures and see my progress, and my husband and I and my son, how we worked hard there. But it's good to even just take pictures of your plants as they bloom, or your vegetables,
sure,
as you harvest.
Sure.
And then you can look back and say, you know, in 1986.
Yeah. Well, you can learn from that too. You can do,
yes,
things that don't work well.
That's right.
And you think you're going to remember everything forever. But when you've got many things, to me, of the same nature, like gardening.
Yes.
Then you've got many new things you're learning, right, you're experiencing, and then some of them get shut out, and you,
right,
you can benefit a lot from, as you say, from your errors and as well as your successes. They're all teachable.
Definitely, that's why we like to have our horticulture moments each week. We have two people who get up and they tell us something that's been very successful or something that's failed. We've had ladies bring dead plants and say, don't do this. You know?
Oh, my.
Don't do this at home.
How dramatic.
So I think we really benefit. And a couple of times a year, we have what we call a green thumb panel. And people hand in their questions. And then the green thumbs, who have expertise in some of these areas, will answer. And that really helps. That helps us a lot. Because we hear firsthand what happened and what to do and what not to do. And I've really benefited from that, because I didn't know what would grow well here in the Oroville area. Since I was from the Bay Area,
yeah,
I had total different thoughts. So, but this drought tolerant thing has really hit us, and we really have to look at that. I mean, we are going to have to cut back a lot. And so some of the things that we have to remember is not just ones that don't take very much water, but are we going to keep our bees alive? Are we going to still feed our birds?
Yeah.
And will we have plants that attract beneficial insects? We want ladybugs, and
right,
we want,
right,
certain things that eat other things. And I'm learning all that.
Yeah, so one of the things I'd like to throw in here, if I can remember, sure, the statistics correctly, which I tend to forget. Mm-hmm. But I don't know who did this study, but I've seen it quoted here and there, like there's something like 12 to 1,500 native pollinators in California,
yeah,
something like 4,000 nationwide. And I'm not biased against honeybees at all, but one thing you need to think about is they're like we are. They're imported. They weren't native here. They were brought here in the 1800s.
Right.
And so they probably upset a lot of things when they came. But regardless of whether it's the honeybees or any of these other little things,
right,
you think about 12 to 1,500 of them living out there and surviving, and year to year. And regardless of the winters and regardless of the heat in the summer, it's just a phenomenon, and I see them as an indicator of life on Earth in general.
I agree, and I think when I look at my garden, one of the things that I learned was to put water in clean, have it clean for the bees and for all creatures, you know, birds, because, yeah. And you have to know what to do, because when I first started, I didn't realize I need to put a rock in there so the bees could land and get back out again.
Yeah.
And then having the water clean, even if we aren't supposed to use a lot of water, we can have a little dripper.
Oh, yeah.
Because they need that. And I try to go down and clean mine as often as possible, because they can get disease just like we do from nasty water.
Yeah. one of my great things that I came across were are these evaporative coolers, which, of course, they don't have back east because the air is too humid. And that to me, that's a miracle in itself, that this evaporating water can cool a building or a house.
Right.
But they have that little valve that floats on at a certain level. And so I've adapted that for a pool in my backyard, very low level. And it's nice. I don't have to attend to it.
Oh, that's cool.
And the sun evaporates it off, and the bees drink it and other critters. Mm-hmm. Once in a while, a deer will come through. And then when it gets down low enough, then the float rises, and it redoes itself. So it really is possible. You have to first be aware of the need to use water wisely, and also to provide it when you can for yourself, to your garden, and for others.
That's true.
And then once you're aware of that, then you learn ways of getting around it.
A lot of people have ponds, and I have a small pond on my property, and I was worried about that because I haven't been running a recirculating pump that often. And I was able to purchase some really nice pond plants that have kept the water completely clean, and they've made it beautiful, I'm telling you.
How neat. So they use things to keep it clean.
Right. And I notice I have pollywogs, so
yeah,
they're eating the little roots of some of the plants. And I didn't realize, this is one thing I realized here too, is in Oroville, we have the koi pond. And I had never been there. And we took a little tour there. And they had lots of beautiful plants. And so I purchased them there. And then we have one lady in our club who does raise a lot of pond plants. She has several ponds, and I've gotten some from her. But that has really helped to keep the pond clean, and I only have to add water once in a while, and the frogs are happy. And
how neat.
I don't have koi right or any kind of fish right now, but I would like to add one or two, but we'll see as the drought goes along. I want to make sure that I don't have to add a lot of water. But it does bring other little creatures into the yard, the pond. Not bad creatures, but good creatures.
Yeah.
Sometimes people say it brings the raccoons in, but I have not had that problem at my house, luckily, because they will eat koi if they can get to them.
Well, I'm sure they will. After all, they can't go to the 7-Eleven if they've got a hunger panic.
That's
or
true.
Or the grocery store. So those critters have to live, too.
Yeah. Well, I hope we can get people interested in coming, because we always have interesting talks, and there's just a camaraderie with the folks because we all have the same interest. Even if people aren't gardening so much anymore, some people are really into, like I was saying, floral design for entertaining, and they bring their plants in or their flowers. So a couple of times a year, we have a special day of hands-on, like at Christmas or at the end of the year, where we actually make arrangements taught by someone.
Sure.
And I've never learned how to do that, so it's been very good for me. I've learned a lot. And so we provide everything, and we make probably 20 or 30, and then sell them afterwards too, for people to take home. So that's always a good fun thing to do. Hands-on are very good. And we have classes that we hold, workshops, where we learn to make seed feeders and water, like, you know, features for garden and garden art, how to decorate pots, all kinds of stuff. So people who like arts and crafts or artistic type things, gardens have to have those things. It's important to have pretty things in your garden, even if you don't have a lot of plants. So we do that. So I hope that I've mentioned some things that might spark somebody's interest to come and see us.
I sure hope so. And one more time, you can't say it too often, is the dates, times, locations for your regular meetings of the Lake Orville Area Gardener
Right, it'll
Club.
Be next Thursday, by the way. That'll be next Thursday, the second Thursday of each month, except for July and August. We do take those 2 months off in the summer. And 9:30, we have cake, coffee, and conversation. And then at 10, the meeting begins. And it's held at Trinity Presbyterian Fellowship Hall at the church at 2350 Foothill Boulevard. And if anyone needs any more information, they can call me at 218-4527. And that's Galen Trum. And I'll be happy to give you any more information on the club that you would like or any of these things we've talked about that you might be interested in taking part in. We are going to have a tour on the 28th of this month. So if you're interested in that, we always meet at Staples parking lot at 10 a.m. And we caravan, so we don't have to take a lot of cars.
Yeah.
And we will be going to the Sawmill Creek Farms in Paradise.
Hmm.
So that'll be interesting. They have been a family business for many years, and they raise their own vegetables and fruits, and they do can and sell their things there. So it's going to be interesting. I'm looking forward to that. So, maybe someone would just like to come on one of our outings.
All right. And again, you have a website which will lead you to all of the outings and all of the events, I assume.
Right.
To some extent, or
I
it will.
I hope it's been updated.
There you go. There's a job for somebody. Not a very gardening type job.
Right. But. Somebody wants to be the geek.
Yeah.
It's loagardenclub.com.
Okay. And that'll get you.
Right. And there's actually a Facebook page, too, for the Lake Oroville Area Garden Club. So, but any questions, just call me, and I'd be glad to help you. It's interesting because when I went to the last year's meeting for all the clubs in California, was in Southern California, and they have very active clubs down there. Their weather's quite different. And they were talking about animal habitat also, and they are real big into creating animal habitats in natural areas. So that was interesting. We haven't done anything like that here with our club, so that kind of sparked an interest to me. And then another thing they do, the president of the larger club, the state and the national, started doing gardening at a Habitat for Humanity. That's one of their big projects. So we can, if we find one, like here in the area, and they need landscaping, they give us a little stipend to buy plants and go there and do it. So
all
we're
right.
Thinking about maybe doing that next year.
That's great, because we do have active Habitat for Humanity people
we
here.
Do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there's just a lot of things they really, the garden clubs really want to help youth.
Yeah.
We need to spur our youth, like you were saying, to take care of our earth and grow their own vegetables and realize how important it is with the way our society is going now.
Yeah.
We need to raise our own veggies.
Yes, it offers stability and practicality, and more than that, I think it offers an inner value, inner peace, inner feeling.
Right.
It's hard to put in words, but mm-hmm. becomes a part of a person, and that serves them well no matter where they are, what they're
doing.
Well,
there's several gardens here in Oroville now, community gardens, and that's a good thing because there have been people who are retired and some even in wheelchairs that have been able to go there and do something because they felt like they couldn't do it at home anymore. So it's a good thing. And children, troubled youth. We have one group that does troubled youth, and they're doing great. They're really getting into it and realizing they can accomplish something that's worthwhile. And actually, it's soothing. It's very soothing.
Yeah, it's Yes, it's. I was going to say slow paced. I don't know mm-hmm. what pace has to do with it, but it does. It's right. not hurry, and a lot of things flying mm-hmm. at you. It gives all the distractions around you a chance to go away, and then you can deal with what's really important, what's really nice, what's really rewarding.
It gets our focus back on our land and our worth. We were doing a project over at the school garden, and one of the children kept sneaking their phone and doing games. Mm. And I talked to them aside, and I said, you know, this is a time when we put that away, turn it off, because we're communicating with some real earth here and some really good values. So let's put that aside. And now that little boy is one of our best ones because he's active, really. Right. He's very active.
And he's found an outlet.
And that kind of zoned him out when he was playing his games. But now he can be active in the garden. We give him digging jobs and
keep him busy.
Active jobs. And of course, weeding is one of our most horrible things we don't like to do in gardens. But, you know, my granddaughter enjoys helping grandma. And we get the kids doing a job. We'll say, okay, how many can you pick? And we'll put the timer on. And and it becomes a game. But I have a really good tool for weeding. So I had to get something. I find the garden is my sanctuary because last August I had heart surgery and it was very serious. And it took me a long time to get back in the garden. And one of my cardiac rehab was walking down to my garden and back. So every day we took more steps and the gal helped me. And finally I got down where I could see my flowers and plants. And so this year it's still my cardiac rehab going up and down my stairs.
Way to go.
So, and it's a place for me to just reflect, and I enjoy it very much. So.
Yeah, I think the world is, this famous poet, I was in my English class in high school, the world is too much with us. You know, late and soon, getting and spending, we lay waste our hours, little we see in nature, there was hours. That was written in the 1800s.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, when you think, and here we are in the 2000s, it hasn't changed. The world is still too much with us.
Well, I grew up in Pennsylvania, and my father and mother always had a garden, so that was in my blood. Mm. And I guess I passed it on to my son, Matthew, because he's really a gardener.
He sure is.
I have a quote that I put into our book for the club, and it says, gardening is the art that uses flowers and plants as paint and the soil and sky as canvas. Because I thought that was really beautiful. That's the way it is. And you don't have to have a lot of thirsty plants. We can all change our minds on that, you know?
That's the thing. And actually, for somebody just starting now, so to speak, that they'll get right in on the very beginning. They won't start with things that they're going to have to say, I shouldn't plant them this year. They're going to start with things that are all compatible with our low water situation. That'll, you know, they won't miss things they haven't tried or used. They'll have a very good beginning.
It's like rosemary. You buy a small rosemary bush, and it's fragrant, it's flowers, it's beautiful, and you hardly have to water it at all. And mine is humongous now. I let it go. Yeah. And it doesn't just have to be in an herb garden. It can be anywhere so that it brings beauty and fragrance. And there's a lot of things like that. Like, a lot of people don't like plants like agapanthus, you know, we call them African lily or lily of the Nile. That's their common name. But they're wonderful. They just grow and grow, and you don't have to hardly water them. You can neglect them, and they have beautiful purple or white flowers every year. And they can make a nice border. So that's something. And they grow in clumps, so you can even divide them over time.
Sure.
But that's a nice one to start out on as a border. And then for color, the pretty ones are, it's called Gallardia or Blanket Flower. Blanket Flower is a really easy one. It's kind of a daisy type of flower, needs full sun. Not a lot of water. It's very drought tolerant. And it's kind of an orange, red, yellow, beautiful. And I have a lot of those in my garden. I like them a lot. And of course, like I said, certain salvias. You can look up online about salvias, which ones are drought tolerant and which ones are not. There's some beautiful ones. And thyme. There's all kinds of thymes now. Beautiful, smelling, fragrant, and good for cooking. They're nice. And the other one I wrote down was balloon flower. That's a really pretty flower that's pretty drought tolerant. And it has a, they call it a balloon because it looks like that and it pops open. It's very pretty. They say that children like to take them and pop them open. So you have to be careful. You have a lot of dead seed heads. But, and dianthus, that's another one that can really grow thick and hardy, and you can keep deadheading it, and it'll just keep going. It almost becomes like a carpet after a while. And, you know, Lee, one of the things that I didn't know much about, and I bought a six-pack of, I think a year and a half ago or so, it was a thyme that's creeping, and it's become like a lawn almost. It's it becomes a ground cover. You can even step on it. Doesn't die. Yeah. And so I put it down by the pond, and it's just spread and gone all over. So those are some things people could put in. Just get a little six pack of that creeping thyme and put it in, and it flowers at certain times of the year, and it's very hardy. I've hardly watered it at all. So there's a lot of really nice natives that we see growing along when we're going up the highway.
Yeah.
And they can grow right in your backyard. I bought a couple of those at that native nursery. And
well, I guess obviously there's more time left to get started with these things.
Yes.
How late is too late? Is there a too late? I guess for indoor, mm-hmm. there's never a too late, but for outdoor things, there must be a... Okay, it's too late in the season.
Well,
now.
Not really, because we have a Mediterranean climate here, and so we'll have good weather clear into October. It's good to check, you know, always be checking on your, yeah. when you buy a plant, how long the season is. A lot of them just have to be deadhead and they'll bloom twice in one season. So I try to get those. I like to have something blooming. And then learning to plant staggered, I call it, because you want something blooming fall, you want something in the hot summer that doesn't wilt. So you kind of have to look up those things. And there's a lot of good perennial books out there. And I've even picked up some at the secondhand stores that are very expensive books that someone discarded over time.
Sure.
And they're really helpful as to what to grow when. And I get Better Homes and Gardens and Sunset magazines. A lot of times they'll give you a map, they call it, of what to plant together, what works well, what color schemes to go with. I'm sort of a I do what I want to do kind of gardener, but I do look at their suggestions because some are companion plants that they're good for each other. So I'm learning all that. It's a process.
One phrase, I'm sure I understand it. I know I do, but for anybody that might have been listening, the word deadhead, I hear that a lot.
Oh, yes.
They're not plants that are hippies. And
no, that's right. No, it's not. That just means that you're cutting off the spent flowers at a certain point so that they will rebloom. And you have to look at them. It's like a rose. When you look at a rose, you have to see where a new little stem, leaflet is coming out, so you know there's going to be a new regrowth. But some have to be cut all the way down, so you know your flower and how it can be deadheaded. I'm sorry, that is true. That's sort of that's a gardener's talk.
Yeah, well, once in a while. And one other thing. This is my personal experience, a lot of it being negative. So this year I went to a nursery place. I got a couple of cherry tomato plants that are big, so I have to have them in the garden. They're right on the deck. I can water them. We can get them sun and all.
Yes.
And I've sort of needing to learn a little bit about care and feeding. In the past, I can remember one in particular we had on the deck. It was a regular tomato plant. It grew sky high. It had all these blossoms. Nothing, never a fruit, not even one. And here I'm probably overdoing watering, fertilizing. Is there some clue about tomatoes or something that you can give that might be helpful?
Tomatoes are a sticky deal because now we have so many things being done to tomatoes to keep them from getting bugs or from diseases, and they're really not natural anymore. So then we're adding more fertilizer, more things than they even have fertilizer already in them. So it's better to get the real deal, to go with a heirloom or a one that you know where the seeds have come from, order them online. We get impatient and we buy our little seedlings, which are okay, but you need to read the labels because, I mean, even the nurseries like Home Depot and Lowe's here, they do have those kind of tomatoes. They're usually more expensive if you're going to buy seedlings. But you can also get them here right at our farmers markets. I did buy some this year from farmers markets, and we did start some from seed. So the Wednesday night market is becoming very popular now. I really like it because you know they're all locally grown, and you can actually talk to the person that started the plant or the seed. So that's really good. And then I'm trying something new this year with my tomatoes that my son suggested, but we're doing a mound this year with different levels of ingredients, whatever you want to call it, of soil and compost and so forth. And so I'm hoping I won't have to feed my tomatoes this year because they'll be naturally feeding on these, on what's going, the roots going down into. So I'm anxious to see how this will work because I was the same as you. I did have some blossoms that never came about, or the tomatoes were not formed properly. And I was very disappointed. So I'm anxious to see. Some of mine already have small tomatoes on them, so I'm thinking it's going to be a good thing.
Yeah, I suspect you can over-fertilize tomatoes. That's just it. Maybe that's what I did with the others. I don't recall what I did, but I was so excited. They were so tall and big.
I know.
And full of blossoms. Like, and then I have to look up on the internet something about tomato blossom drop or something. I didn't get much to it about it, but it seemed to be that people have addressed this, that blossoms come and they just don't set.
A lot of time it's overwatering. We get excited and want to overwater them, and it causes a type of fungus or a type of virus that hits them, and then you have to watch out. You might have a gopher if it all of a sudden just disappears. But hopefully that won't happen. But tomatoes, there's a lot of tricks to tomatoes, but I think this mound planting and lasagna planting, it's called. You can go online and find this thing called lasagna planting, where it shows you how to start by putting green waste and brown waste and different soils and compost, and keep, you're actually making like your own little compost pile for your plants.
Yeah,
and it's a really good way for it to be decomposing and giving those microbes to your plants. And they say we're killing a lot of our natural microbes in the soil by the things we do. Pesticides and all those type of things. We try to avoid. There are a lot of natural things to do. There's a lot of sites on that, how to make your own sprays and so forth. And it's really, it does work. You just have to go and squirt it on yourself, you know, or pick the little bugs off.
Yeah.
You can do that if you have the patience. But I hope everybody will look into getting good seeds or good starts, because that's one of our biggest problems now, are all these things they've put so much into the plants that they aren't natural anymore. So an heirloom, tomatoes are a little bit picky. Some of them are kind of finicky because they're special and we don't know how to treat them. And so if you're going to grow an heirloom tomato, you really need to get information on it. I had two last year. I don't have any this year. The one last year was like black, you know, it was almost black in color, and it was different. It had a different flavor, but good starts.
And one thing I missed on, we assume folks know a lot if they listen here in Oroville, But the Wednesday night farmers market, where is that located and what time?
It starts at 4 and goes till 8. And it's actually, I think it's 5 to 8, excuse me. They set up around 4. And it's on Montgomery and Myers. And there's certified farmers. And then there's a spot for people just like us who just pay a small fee and come down. And there's some really interesting homemade things, soaps and herbal salves and things like that. And,
sure. Well, it sounds just like the Saturday. I've gone to the Saturday somewhat.
It is.
Same location and everything. So.
And they're trying to develop it because some people couldn't come on Saturdays, and it kind of brings people into town.
Sure, it's a great idea.
To see our old part of town.
It's a great idea.
It has some really nice shops, and we're neglecting them. So I think it's a good social thing, kind of like what Chico started years ago, and now it's a big social deal.
That's a circus is what it is. It's really.
Seriously, so... That's something to think about, because I got quite a few starts there that were very healthy. They have fresh eggs, and you meet the farmers, and I even bought 2 blueberry bushes there from the Berry Berry Man. So there's a lot of diversity. It's a lot of good stuff. So, and I'm hoping this year, one last thing I want to say is our club has the opportunity to apply for awards for things we've done. So we keep track, like this year I entered my backyard garden for an award, so I'm anxious to see if anything happens, you know, because it gets in a group of a whole bunch of really high-end, so I'm anxious to see. And some people for our different classes we taught and different plants that we've raised. So if some person has, like they do orchids or roses, it's a real simple thing to enter these award, and it's fun, and then you sometimes it's a monetary award, sometimes it's just a hey, good job, well done with your picture.
Nothing wrong with that.
So there's so much good going on at the Lake Oroville Area Garden Club that I just hope our membership keeps growing, and we need more gentlemen. We do have a few, but we'd like to have more. So come on down and be sure and visit us this Saturday at our booth at the gazebo at Sank Park.
Okay.
Because we're going to have a lot of beautiful things, one of a kind, succulents, a lot of succulents that are very reasonable in unusual planters. We do recycled, reusable, old-fashioned chairs, you name it. We do it, and they're always a nice gift.
All right. Well, thanks again to Gaylin Trum, president of the Lake Oroville Area Garden Club, on the web, www.loagardenclub.com. Thanks again.
Thank you.